You probably heard on the news or read in internet searches that the Pope gave an interview to Jesuit magazines around the world that was published maybe a week or so ago, and there has been a huge amount of commentary in the secular press, as well as the religious press, about that interview. And one of the articles about the Pope and the impact he's making around the world was in the op-ed section of the San Jose Mercury News this week, and I'd like to read a little bit because these articles, some of them have been filled with great appreciation and insight into the Pope's message, but they've also misunderstood some key parts of his message. So let me read a little bit from this article. It's called Call It a Breath of Fresh Air from the Vatican. It's written by Leonard Pitts, who's a journalist at the Miami Herald. A few words on the new Pope. Since ascending to the papacy in March, the former Jorge Mario Bergoglio has managed to surprise and impress the religious and irreligious alike by living a brand of faith seldom seen on the public stage. Pope Francis insists on carrying his own bags, living in a simple apartment, and cooking his own supper. He has largely shunned the papal Mercedes-Benz in favor of a 5-year-old Ford Focus. One of the earliest acts of his papacy was to wash and kiss the feet of a dozen young prisoners, two of them girls, at least one of them a Muslim. But the pontiff's appeal has not been solely stylistic. It has also been a matter of substance. This is, after all, the Pope famously asked, "Who am I to judge gay people?" and who criticized Catholics as narrowly obsessed with abortion, same-sex marriage, and contraception, and who called his church to be for the poor, and who said, "God loves atheists, too." It's kind of an interesting commentary. It goes on for quite a few more paragraphs. And he got some things right and some things wrong. What he got right is the Pope is really trying to reframe the whole question about the foundation of Christianity. And he's trying to say that all of the moral teachings and ethical teachings, social justice teachings, they don't make sense to people unless we get to the core of the Christian faith. And the core that he keeps coming to over and over again is mercy. God is merciful. Jesus Christ is mercy incarnate. And we are called to be merciful. And that ultimately is what all the ethical and moral teachings are based on. What Leonard Pitts got wrong was when he said that Pope Francis considers something like abortion to be kind of on the periphery. In fact, the very next day after the Pope gave this interview, he met with the Italian Medical Association, and he said that every aborted child has the face of Jesus Christ. Every human being is made in the image and likeness of God and beloved of God. And so every abortion is a terrible tragedy because someone made in God's image has been killed. So he's not in any way minimizing abortion. What he is saying, people are not going to understand our teaching about abortion unless they understand our teaching about God as mercy, and we are to imitate his mercy and his compassion. Another misunderstanding of the Pope's message in many commentators has been, since he has such an open heart toward non-Catholics and non-Christians, since he reaches out to the Muslims, he is even in dialogue on a regular basis with an atheist who's the editor of a big magazine in Italy. It's become a sensation in Italy. The message is, everybody's saved. Everybody's going to heaven. Well, somebody in this gospel didn't go to heaven. The rich man. And in fact, Jesus, when he spoke about who's really on the path to heaven, he said, there are few people on that path. It's the narrow path that leads to life and the broad path that leads to destruction. Now, Jesus is not saying that all those people on that broad path are going to be destroyed. What he is saying is that if they don't change, if they don't repent, then they're heading for some disaster in the future. People who are totally into secularism, agnosticism, atheism, people who have no compassion for the poor, people who exploit others and abuse others, they're on that broad path that leads to destruction. And what Jesus wants is for everybody to be going on that narrow path that leads to life, that leads to salvation. So let's look at this guy who ended up in hell. This guy in today's gospel, the rich man. What was his sin that led him to hell? The gospel doesn't tell us that he actually committed any evil act. It just says that he wore beautiful clothes, he liked to party, he liked to eat and drink. Well, that's not a sin. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, when we had the gospel of the prodigal son, when the prodigal son finally returns home, his father throws a big party for him. There's eating and drinking, and the father gives him some beautiful clothes because the father is overjoyed that his wayward son has come home. So partying and eating and drinking, that's not a sin. So, unless you get drunk. So what was his sin? His sin that led him to hell was that he was oblivious. He was oblivious. He was self-absorbed, so concerned with having a good time that he didn't notice this poor beggar at his door, at the very door of this rich man's house, this poor guy, Lazarus, who's obviously very physically ill. He's got sores all over his body. And this rich man who, you know, went in and out of his house every day, he didn't even notice this man who was suffering right there at his front door. His sin was not to have done, his sin was to have done nothing for the poor and the suffering. And remember when Jesus talked about judgment, the last judgment scene, who are the people who end up in hell? Who are the people who end up in heaven? People who end up in heaven are those who fed the hungry and clothed the naked and welcomed the prisoners and the lonely and the sick. Those who didn't end up in heaven were those who did not respond with compassion and mercy to the suffering. So what Jesus is really telling us is that some of the most serious sins are sins of omission, things we did not do. And so what we are invited to is really examine how we are treating people, whether they're right around us, or people we may not know who are on the margins of society, who are really kind of forgotten by society. Now, one of the obvious conclusions is we have to have an active, conscious outreach to people who are poor, who are sick, who are neglected. That's obvious. What is not so obvious is we also have to be attentive to the people right around us. After communion today, you're going to hear a couple give an invitation to married people to come to a marriage encounter. It's a great weekend for people to improve their relationship. And I have found, usually, when couples are getting ready to get married, and they're dating, and their first, you know, months of marriage, they're very attentive to each other. And they're very affectionate with each other, very tender. You know, and the guy, especially when he's trying to woo the girl, you know, he treats her like a queen, you know, gives her gifts, maybe he sends her flowers, then he has her over for dinner, puts candles on the table. That's sweet. 10 years later, the same guy says, "Hey, you, hey, give me a beer." What happened to that tenderness? What happened to the flowers on the table? What happened to, "I love you, honey. You are so special to me." I have met couples married 30 and 40 years. They hardly pay attention to each other. Fortunately, not most of the couples I know, but there are couples who have been together for years, and they never tell each other anymore, "I love you. I really appreciate what you're doing for me." So marriage encounter really helps to re-enliven a marriage and really kind of make even a very good marriage better. But my point is that we can be ignoring people in our own homes. And teenagers, you know, how many teens at school who maybe belong to kind of the in crowd and they've got, you know, good friends, how often do they reach out to the lonely kid who maybe is a bit of an outcast, who doesn't quite fit in? You see, that teenager is following that same path of the rich man, that broad path that leads to destruction. That teenager is oblivious to people in his own school who are lonely, who are suffering exclusion. So we have to be really attentive to those in our immediate environment and make a conscious effort to find out how we can help people who really are suffering devastation. Like how many, you know, down in Mexico, millions of people are affected by the floods from 2 weeks ago. there are thousands and thousands of people, you know, on the streets. How many of us have sent some money? So we have, you know, all kinds of opportunities, but we need to look for those opportunities, be alert to those opportunities. Now, if you think I'm just talking to you and I'm not talking to me, you're wrong. We're all in the same, I suspect, we're all in the same boat. We have to struggle with our self-centeredness. Just a simple example from my life. Like on Sunday mornings, sometimes, you know, when I've got the 7 a.m. Mass, the alarm rings at 6 o'clock, and I'm embarrassed to tell you that one of the first things that comes out of my mouth when I hear that alarm at 6 a.m. is, oh, no. It's Sunday morning. I've got to get up and celebrate Mass. Now, you wouldn't think that would be a very priestly thing to say, but I do sometimes. And I kind of almost make a childlike prayer in some of those moments just to kind of get myself centered. And I say, Lord, do you want me to get out of bed? Would you like me to go celebrate Mass or stay here and sleep? And so it kind of frames the question, you know. And then when we make those simple petitions to the Lord, like the parent in the middle of the night, the child's crying, having a nightmare or maybe sick, parent's exhausted, has to get up at 5 in the morning to get to work. And, of course, the parent, you would love to stay in bed, but if the parent just says, Lord, you know, give me a deep love for my child. You know, give me the energy I need to take care of him right now. The Lord responds always to those petitions. So what the Lord is inviting all of us to do is to imitate God, who is mercy, who is compassion.